fine, fine.
What's up?
Hey, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Good to
All right.
Hear
your so, voice. Paul has not met Don yet. Don,
Hi.
That's Paul.
Hi, Don. This is Paul.
And
hey, Paul.
Don is our resident Thor expert. So
awesome.
He knows everything there is to know about Thor. He was on last week's podcast.
Good.
And he basically filled us all in on Thor stuff. The Thor Gospel. The Gospel of Thor.
Rad.
Did you guys get any feedback on it? Anything good? Or?
A lot of people... I've gotten some texts and messages through Facebook from people who really liked it. So, you did good, kid.
All right.
You did good. Well, first of all, let's just say that this is a part-time fanboy. And we are here to talk about Thor the Dark World. I am here with Ian and Paul. And returning is Don Lund, the Thor expert, who was on with us last week. So who wants to get started? Should we let our guest go first?
Yeah, absolutely.
What'd you think, Don? How did Thor the Dark World live up to your expectations?
I thought it was pretty good. I think I probably still like the first movie better.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it was a much, much stronger film overall from beginning to end. Although this one had a lot more action. It was pretty nonstop. But, yeah, there was some things, you know, some questions that I thought that it created more questions than answers somewhat with the plot. But it was still fun. And still, I mean, before I say anything possibly negative, is it's still the most perfectly cast Thor ensemble that I could imagine. And Hemsworth is an absolutely perfect Thor. You've got the best... Will anybody ever be able to play Loki?
He's kind of owned that role the same way that Robert Downey Jr. owned Iron Man.
Yeah, absolutely. Or what's his face, Hugh Jackman with Wolverine.
Mm. Yes. How are we going to replace you? Supposedly he's played his last role now with, or it's been at least been filmed for his last Wolverine. But anyway, yeah, Thor was pretty good. I thought I had fun. I don't necessarily want to be put on the spot because I want to see what everybody else thought. As a Thor fan, I'm going to love some aspect of it one way or another because you know, Thor's my guy. So I'm more interested to see, is this the type of film that's going to bring more people to my tent, you know, to be part of, you know, Thor fandom? So what did you guys think?
Gotcha. Who wants to go next?
I'll jump in.
Please.
I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it had a little bit of a slow start, jumping into things, but once it finally like sort of started firing on all cylinders, you know, it did a good job of not letting up. I really enjoy, you know, Hemsworth. I thought that the first film like really sort of coasted on Chris Hemsworth's charisma, you know,
uh-huh.
And this one not as much, you know. I feel like, you know, I mean, he's definitely there. He's showing up, you know. He's doing the charismatic Thor thing, but you know, I felt like for the most part the cast sort of around him came up to that level too. It moved really quickly. I felt like there were so many balls in the air that quite a few of them got dropped along the way or forgotten about.
Yeah.
But you know, man, it was a good time. It was over before I knew it.
Yeah. What about you, Ian? You just saw it this afternoon. So
I
did
just
you,
saw
Paul,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Here's my analogy. This movie to me was like a nice bottle of wine that is of quality that was like brought to my house. I drank it and recognize that it's a good bottle of wine, but it just wasn't my taste, I don't think.
Huh.
I liked a lot of things in the movie. I actually loved a lot of things in the movie. I thought they were spot on, but I was just like, I don't know. I left like kind of underwhelmed. I guess there were some specific reasons. I was just like, eh. But honestly, I actually do agree with a lot of what you guys are saying. I love Chris Hemsworth. I love Hiddleston. I think he's fantastic. I love the character design of the dark elf guy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. I just wanted him to mumble to himself more. he didn't mumble at all. I thought if he had some weird facial tic or mumbled to himself, he would have been even creepier. But I love this, and again, just super quality as far as the productions. I love the productions Marvel puts out with their movies. I just think they always try to do the fans justice. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
But I'll get into more details. But after you go, Christian.
Well, it's interesting because I was talking to some people at work about it today, and well, let me just say that I thought it was really solid. I really enjoyed it. I loved the design of the movie. I mean, just everything just looked spectacular to me. I was like, wow, like this looks really great. Like Asgard, all mm-hmm. the spaceships, all the, you know, the elves looked really cool. Asgard definitely looked like a place I wanted to visit and stuff. Hemsworth was great. What's his face? Hiddleston? Mm-hmm. He was terrific as Loki. I was actually afraid that Loki was going to steal the show, and to me, he didn't. You know what I mean? That was my big fear for Thor going in, that it would be more like Loki the movie and not so much Thor, and it turned out not to be that way. It's interesting because I had this same experience with Thor that I had with Iron Man and the Avengers, where I was watching the Avengers and Iron Man 3, excuse me, and the Avengers, where I was watching those two movies and they started off and I was like, ooh, I don't know about this. This could not be good. And then as it went and it went and it went, it just got better and better and better and better. And then by the end, I was just completely satisfied. I was like, this was a fun movie. I think, like Paul said, and maybe this speaks to Ian's opinion, is by the end, you were kind of like left with the feeling that things weren't quite necessarily resolved completely. And I think that dovetails into the weakness of the first Thor movie to me, in that the Thor movies, more than any of the others, like Iron Man, Captain America, they seem to be like we're taking place in part of a bigger puzzle, you know what I'm saying? Instead of just letting them be their own thing, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
It does.
But I gotta say, I mean, I just looked at the movie and I just thought it looked gorgeous, and I couldn't take my eyes off it. I just felt like it was a little slow to start, mostly because you're playing catch up with Jane Foster, and the Earth stuff, like the Kat Dennings stuff, the Jane Foster stuff, like that stuff really got on my nerves. It, like, so much of it just seemed like forced humor to me. Like, just like really like, isn't it funny? Look at the intern. Like, look at Kat Dennings. Isn't she witty? And to me, Kat Dennings is kind of coming across as the new Lori Petty, in my opinion. And but as a whole, like, I gotta say, I really, really liked it. I mean, to me, it's a very good follow-up to Iron Man 3. And there's definitely some things that I felt it lacked, but like Hiddleston, like that, I mean, excuse me, Hemsworth, I mean, he rocks as Thor. I mean, he definitely gets it. And I feel like, Don, did you feel at all, like there's a part of me that really just wants to see Thor go like mano a mano. Like there was the fight scene in London or England or wherever they were, Bristol, or I can't remember. And they're fighting and they're tossing each other through the air. But I just really wanted to see like a super like close up fight, like with Thor just like slamming his hammer in somebody's face.
Yeah,
and the other guy just like them just going like cats and dogs. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. I would have liked to have seen, but there were so many characters, I guess that's part of it. It was visually, I mean, they kind of took off from the first film and kept a lot of those Asgard visuals. Although, in part, I mean, and here's the strange part maybe for people that have been reading the comic for a really long time, and I don't like to get too much into parsing the differences, but the main thing is you go to see Lord of the Rings and Star Wars breaks out. So much of the spaceships and the lasers, you know, dark elves.
Yeah.
I
mean,
Because when you're seeing what the Kirby creations and those aspects, and suddenly they're all, they're the Dark Elves look like stormtroopers, with funny, weird masks. But visually still stunning and amazing. A lot of stuff going on. And yes, I guess kind of like the first movie, you get Thor fighting some, but not that. Yeah, that he gets hit hard maybe once. He goes, I thought I was going to get hit harder, right?
Yeah.
He gets back up, dusts himself off, and goes back at. So yeah, the actual physical combat of it was it was still fun to watch. It was, and again, the special effects were I guess amazing, kind of off the charts as far as the flight scenes. My very favorite early on in the movie, where he jumps off the balcony and lets Mjolnir and his hammer catch up with him to take off to fly. Oh, that was extremely awesome. Imaginative, right out of the comics. Maybe even done better than you can do in the comics. That was probably one of the coolest little scenes that I'd seen.
Yeah, it seems like they finally figured out what to do with the hammer. You know what I mean? It was cool to see that, and I think it really was sort of Kirby-esque, in a lot of ways, because you had sort of the, the science that's so advanced that it looks like magic, there were, I think, a lot of sort of Kirby-esque touches to this one that were really fun, and that last battle, that was really well thought out. All those balls up in the air, the constant portal shifting, like that was really cool. It was really nice to see them, take a completely different approach to, sort of the last big epic battle than they did in the Avengers,
Yeah. It's funny, Don. A lot of the stuff that was pulled from this, I didn't realize until after I left the movie and did a little more reading. A lot of the stuff was pulled from Simonson's run, right?
Well, at least certainly inspired by it. I mean, they definitely had some differences, but I mean, at least as far as,
Like
with
Curse?
With Curse, where they kind of said, well, there's a whole bunch of them, but now there's only going to be one more Curse. I mean, they kind of, they took some, creative liberties, as they do in any kind of adaptation, but it was cool. I mean, he was originally Algrim, and he became, Curse. He was, in the Simonson run, if you recall, he was more tricked by Malekith than necessarily volunteering to be Curse, necessarily, to be that kind of undead kind of creature. And the other thing that they obviously were going to leave out, which would be really hard to explain for a movie, is that Curse was powered up by the Beyonder.
Yeah.
Curse 2 versus, say, just this magic little rock that he, crushes in his hand and becomes super powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, it's interesting that Loki got to finish off Curse rather than Thor, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. Well, it's that was some really good stuff, too, whereas Loki, was kind of like spitting in everyone's face and, acting like he didn't want to have anything to do with it. And then, spoilers, we should have said in the beginning of the episode, I'll write it on the website, we're going to spoil the heck out of this thing. But
you should just rename the website that.
Yeah, we're going to spoil the shit out of it. But I really, the whole thing of Loki really being affected by his mother's death and trying to play it off in the beginning. And I just love that little scene where Thor is like, okay, enough, enough with the illusions, drop it. I know that you're hurting just as much as the rest of us. And then, Loki drops the illusion and you see that he's pretty much had the temper tantrum, of all time in his cell. You know what I mean?
That was I thought that was so well done. I really enjoyed the jail stuff. And maybe again, it was that, the art direction and the creative design, because they really didn't leave anything like that just wasn't designed. Like, how many movies have you seen where like the force field on the jail is always clear until they touch it?
Yeah.
But this time they decided to just put a little texture there, and I'm like, God, that's not bothering me. I actually like it. It's like,
well, it was a gorgeous texture too.
It was a beautiful
ornate design, that just, I love the attention to detail.
Yeah. What about that shot where, did you guys catch that shot where they were in the cell and then they go through the barrier?
Yes. And I was like, I'm thinking, well, that was useless. But then the shot kept going and I'm like, no, that wasn't useless. That was pretty awesome.
It was a really sweet shot when I saw that happen, and I was like, oh, did we just go through? We did just go through the thing. And then it's like, you know, you keep going through. You know, it's funny because I really think that the problem that I had with it was mostly the pacing in the beginning, and it seems to me like they might have rearranged stuff in editing, because you know how the movie opens up with you know, the whole exposition of like the dark elves and Malekith and all that stuff, and then later on in the movie you have Odin opening up the book and he's like explaining about Mal, and I'm like, why are we going over this information? I mean, I get that he has to explain it.
You are so right, dude. I was thinking that same thing, because even the cut from when he first meets I don't even know her name, Thor's girl,
Jane Foster,
that cut was so harsh, and I'm like, whoa, did he just forget about her? He's that much of a dick? And all of a sudden we're in the book scene. It felt very abrupt.
Yeah, and it seems to me like that beginning exposition, like all that elf, might have fit better in the scene where Odin's actually explaining it to them, right? And then, but maybe they just did that because the pacing in the beginning, you know, with Jane Foster starting off on Earth, I mean, that was kind of, I mean, sort of lame, you know? The other thing... No, go ahead, Paul.
No, I definitely feel that there's a lot that ended up on the cutting room floor.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you had you had sort of the romantic triangle thing. Absolutely. That was being set up with Sif and Jane and Thor, and then that just went like nowhere. You know, you had them dropping off one of the Warriors Three, like pretty much saying, okay, bye, not gonna see you again.
Yeah, absolutely. You can stay here. Like, he literally says, stay here for a while with your family. And you know that the unfortunately the Asian man is not gonna be in the rest of the movie. You're just like, great, great.
It felt like the It felt like there was just so much more, you know, to this thing that, you know, that didn't make the final cut. And I'm not, you know, maybe it didn't for good reason, but it for me, it's like, wow, I kind of wanted more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I really feel like it could have been like a 2.5-hour movie, or maybe even 3, because I, for one, wanted to see Sif, you know, and they kind of hinted at it in the very beginning, but they didn't like fulfill like that, you know, the promise of that early scene, you know. And it's very evident, because when they are trying to, you know, they're going to go rescue Jane, right, in the movie, they look at Sif, and Sif makes his face like, oh really, like I have to be the one to get her out? And it's like, well, and then there's a scene where she's like marching down the hall and she shoots Jane a dirty look. You know, and it's like, wow, that's, you know, why is she shooting her? I mean, there's definitely a couple of scenes that just wound up on the cutting room floor. And then there's the basic fact that there's no way, in my imagination, that a guy like Thor would pick mousy little Jane Foster over Sif. I'm sorry.
I'd take that warrior girl in a second.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's just like, I don't know. I miss the Sif, the Sif, you know, sort of... stuff from the comics where she's like really in love with Thor, but he wants to take care of Midgard, and she's like, oh, I don't really give a crap about Earth, you know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. What did you think about that stuff, Don?
Well, yeah, no, I'm a big you know, just from the comics, Sif is a really, really cool character to explore. She's barely, I mean, they barely scratched the surface of her character in both movies. I was kind of hoping for a little bit more. I think Jamie Alexander is cast perfectly. I mean, that if you're going to bring her from, you know, the land of Kirby to, from Kirby dots into film, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
She's absolutely stunning. And the, you know, she is very tough. She's I think a really good example. I guess they are supposedly hoping to do more with her in the third film. There's, you know, obviously with spoilers, they're obviously going to try to do another film. But the thing that I like the best when you guys were talking earlier with the differences with Loki and Thor, that moment where they're going to Dark World and they're talking to each other trying to figure stuff out. That was my absolute favorite moment in the movie. And from our previous conversation, I was trying to say that Thor-Loki dynamic is what kind of makes them the best, you know, I guess as brothers and as blood adversaries, and how complex that relationship was explored fantastically in just that 1 5-minute conversation in the film. That was my very favorite part of the movie.
That was really well done, where he's like, why can't you just, you know, like where he wants to like really strangle Loki on the boat, and he's like, why can't you just, you know, I forget exactly the phrase that he says, but it's almost like, why can't you just be good? You know what I mean? Why can't you just chill out? Like, he's so frustrated, you know? I thought that was really well done, too. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I did like that moment a lot. I mean, that was some pretty fantastic stuff. I mean, I do feel like there was stuff missing, but I have to say that by the end of the movie, I was just like, well, that was really, really fun. Like, I had a good time, you know what I mean? It didn't you know, necessarily blow open, you know, the pantheon of movies, like, you know, whatever, The Matrix or Star Wars or anything, but that's the thing, is I don't think it needed to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it told a really good story, and by the end I was like, I had fun watching that, and there was a lot of stuff that maybe I want to see more of, which hopefully they'll bring in the third movie, you know?
You want to see more Thor Poncho?
The Thor Poncho was great. I mean, it's stuff like that. Like, what do they wear on Asgard, like, when they're just hanging out? Like, what do they, like, I don't know. I just find that stuff fascinating. And when that art book comes out, I'm buying it. Because I thought the design was just stunning. I really
loved the end credits too.
What was the name? Did you catch the name of that company? Because it was right in the credits, and as soon as I saw this, I'm like, I have to look up how that's done. And because it wasn't 3D, but I believe it was 3D within After Effects. But that paint process was awesome.
Yeah,
just so gorgeous. So awesome. Really subtle coloring in it. And you know, that was a real treat. It's nice. The thing I love about both Thor movies is that they're comic booky, and they're just sort of not like ashamed of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I mean, you know, Iron Man made like a big sort of drive to be a little more grounded and realistic, and that's what most superhero movies do. They try to be grounded and realistic. And, you know, Thor doesn't mess with that. You know, it's just like, it is what it is. It's like, yeah, these are gods fighting in, you know, in Asgard and, you know, across the realms. It's so big and comic booky and completely unapologetic for that.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing, is they were smart enough to see, like, oh, this is Lord of the Rings. You know what I mean? Like, this is basically like Dungeons and Dragons. Like, yeah, let's go in that direction, you know? Like,
yeah,
and
the scope and the scale, what I was talking, you know, I was trying to explain before, what's fun about Thor is that he can be fighting across 9 realms, and then next week, in next week's episode, he'll be hanging out with Captain America in the bar. So,
yeah,
that's the fantastic, and I do agree that they were unapologetic about it, and maybe that's my one of my favorite aspects of it, is that we're going to go big, and we're going to throw it all at you, and hopefully you can catch up with us.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that I've been saying about, like, superhero movies for years and years and years, is, like, you know, especially with the early Marvel movies and some of the DC stuff, where they're like, oh, they have to explain everything. They have to explain, you know, it's like, oh, we have to make this all make sense. Like, oh, why does the Hulk turn green? And I'm like, dude, he just turns green, and he hits stuff. It doesn't matter why he turns green. Like, you know, it's like getting so caught up in why things happen is just detrimental to, like, you know, the fantasy aspect of certain films. You know, you don't need to go and explain it down to the minutiae. You can just say, like, oh, this is why this happens. Like, one of my big problems with, like, the Batman movies and him wearing armor, I mean, all you have to do is be like, Bruce Wayne pulls out a cloth and says, oh, we developed this at, you know, Wayne Tech, it can block, you know, knives and, you know, close range bullets, and then that's all you have to do. Oh, he invented something. Great, done, move on, you know? So that's what I really, really loved about Thor 2, Paul. I think that's a really good point, that they just, you know, went balls to the wall and said, like, let's just make this, you know, Lord of the Rings, superhero, you know, all out, you know, stakes are high. That's the other thing that I really liked about this. I mean, the stakes were really high. Like, they did not mess around. You know, it was like this guy Malekith, like, he wants to destroy everything. He's not into, like, I want to run, you know, Stark Industries, or I want to take over the city. He's like, he wants to destroy reality one by one, you know? And it's like, you don't get much worse than that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I really want to know more about that character, you know? I would love for him to have had more screen time.
Yeah.
But they used him pretty sparingly, and that worked out well too, you know. I mean, part of the risk with doing the superhero movie is that they end up becoming, you know, the supervillain movie, you know. And, you know, they didn't do that. It was definitely focused on the heroes.
So, big spoiler that we're about to talk about, because, like, let's focus on a couple of little elements about the movie.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about Loki's death scene? Because when it happened in my theater, people freaked out. Like, there was gasping. There was like, and I'm sitting next to my wife. I'm like, he's not dead. I'm like, there's no way. He's the trickster god. What did you guys think of how they pulled that off?
He was faking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was nice. I mean, in a way, it felt like it was Loki sort of giving Thor his out. You know what I mean? It's him getting it's kind of interesting. It's like, I feel like Loki, like, he wants to get away, he wants to preserve himself, but at the same time he does sort of want to let Thor have his dignity, you know, and he wants to give him, you know, a way out, you know. There's still they hate each other, but there still is that brotherly love there.
Oh, that's an interesting way of looking at it. What did you think, Don?
I thought it was perfect, and you know, for the moment, I mean, the shock value, the gasp in the theater, I mean, you know, that's fairly well carried out when, you know, regardless of where you're watching it, it's kind of a universal whoa kind of a moment. And but yeah, as far as his, you know, the actual demise and him, it was great, and it set up that very final scene perfectly. It sets up possibly, because there's a couple stories they can heavily borrow from that last scene with Loki in the movie. I don't know if we want to talk about that last moment, but it was perfect, because it did. He was, despite him helping, despite him wanting to help Thor and them both wanting to preserve Asgard, that goal is the same. It's always the same. They both want Asgard to rule supreme. They just have a different idea of how it should be run.
Yeah.
So that's for the brotherly rivalry, and it makes sense. You know, you love your brother, but I can run Asgard better than you, man. You know, so that's, it makes sense. And the death scene was carried out perfectly. And Loki's last little, you know, his machinations were fantastic.
Yeah. You know what got the biggest gasp in the theater today was the moment where, it's a trick, but the moment where Thor's hand is torn off. You know,
Like
people just like, what? that was a really shocking moment.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I remember I kept thinking, like, wait a minute, I know Aquaman got his hand cut off. Did Thor get his hand cut off? Like, I remember thinking, like, trying to think back in the comics, like, did they give Thor like a glove or something? And I was like, I was like, when the movie was going to be over, I was actually going to email Don and be like, did they cut Thor's hand off? Because I remember Aquaman got his hand cut off, but Thor's hand, like, yeah, that was definitely, what was interesting to me is how they cut his hand off and there was like not a lot of blood. And I was like, that stump should be gushing right about. I mean, even when Luke Skywalker got his hand cut off in Empire, there was like spurts of blood. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, that's a pretty clean cut. So, but yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That was a really good moment. And I fell for that. I was like, dude, did they just cut Thor's hand off? But like, I was not. The other thing that blew me away in the movie was the funeral scene, how beautifully that was executed. I was just like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, this is gorgeous. It looks absolutely fantastic. Like
and And also the thing I loved about it too is the fact that, like, they gave, you know, they had the funeral for the queen, but they also acknowledged all those other people that died.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, like, so often it's like, you know, when you have, like, sort of the big epic funeral, it's all about, you know, just your main character. And, you know, but the fact that they included all of those other, you know, soldiers and other people in it, like, that was a nice touch.
It was, and keeping in with Viking tradition, you know, the Viking boats and setting them on fire with all their possessions, I thought was kind of cool. Now, as far as, it was an interesting surprise because the character's still alive in the comics, obviously, but they needed that dramatic moment. It made sense for the movie to bring the brothers together at least temporarily as allies. And so, yeah, I thought it really worked. That was probably the biggest surprise for me, and still, you know, trying to, you know, but since, you know, in the framework of they're probably looking at just three movies, it kind of makes sense. But in the comics, she's a great go-to character for a lot of other things, and she did a great job of Renee Russo playing that part and going toe-to-toe with Malekith there for a moment.
Yeah, Ian, what did you think of that fight? Because you're the fighter in the group. Like, what did you? Because I thought there was some pretty cool swordplay that she was pulling off.
Between the, which one was this?
Thor's mom and Malekith.
Oh yeah, I was like, is that a stunt double? Like, I was looking really close.
Yeah, me too.
And I was like, I actually said "damn" out loud in the movie theater. I don't know. I thought all the choreography was fantastic, minus those couple shots. I would have loved just to seen him double holding onto the hammer with the lightning just around his face or something. You know what I mean? Like a super, like you were saying, there was some lack of close-ups when it came to Thor fighting.
Yeah.
But all the other stuff, even Loki's moves, I was like, whoa, he could really use that little dagger.
Yeah.
It was all very convincing, you know.
It's interesting because the another thing that kind of bugged me was the curse armor. It looked really a little too costumey to me. Like, I thought it could have been put together a little better. I mean, he looked badass, but there was something about it that seemed a little fake to me. Who's this guy? Curse, the dark elf who gets, like, turned into that monster.
You know, it's weird. He looked really wide and hobbly and, like, kind of flat and fat at the same time.
Yeah, it was just really weird, like, how...
Oh, yeah.
The costume.
You know, part of what it was is that it was a practical suit. You know,
yeah.
That you're not. I mean, I think that it's kind of funny that we've gotten so used to seeing, you know, CG characters that when they choose to do something as a practical suit, it's like, wow, that's, you just don't see that every day. You know.
Yeah.
I was actually really impressed that they went with the practical suit on that beast, because that was a pretty elaborate getup.
Yeah, and you know, this movie could have easily devolved into, like, Masters of the Universe, you know what I mean? I mean, it could have really, with all those costumes and all those, it could have gone bad, like, really fast. And, you know, even though the curse armor kind of bugged me a little bit, I mean, for the most part, I thought everything just looked, like, really cool. Just, like, really, again, the design, even the costume designs, I just thought everyone looked fantastic. So, well, I don't know.
Speaking of looking, how things looked, let's talk about that second post-credit stinger.
The first one or the second one?
Oh, wait
the
a minute.
First
oh,
one.
No.
The Guardians.
Oh, no.
Wow. That
wait
was
a minute.
Bad.
Wait a minute. Guys, I got to really ask all of you. I need all of you to weigh in on this right now. Is it possible is it possible I left this movie feeling underwhelmed because of that scene? And the only reason I'm asking this question is because once Benicio del Toro said, one of five, all I could think of was, like, Pokemon. And are these guys going to – does that mean I have to watch four more movies until we get to the Infinity Gauntlet?
Oh, yeah, dude. You're going to have to watch – yeah, I mean, because you've got...
And that's what pissed me off! That's what fucking pissed me off!
But that's the thing. That's why I felt, too, like, that the Thor movies are a little bit hampered by being part of, more so than Iron Man, more so than any of the others, it seems like they use Thor the most as a bookend to reach into the other movies, you know what I'm saying? And That's what kind of bugged me about this movie, because when you got to the end and you had the Loki reveal, it's like, oh, you know, something else is coming. And it just seems like, oh, I kind of wish they'd save that Loki reveal for the next Thor movie. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, he would have just left, and Odin would have left him, left on the throne, and they should have left that reveal for, like, the beginning of Thor 3. Like, I'm not really dead. Because think about, like, how pissed off the fans would have been, you know, especially the female fans, if Loki had died in the movie. It would have been like Spock, like, dying in Star Trek 2, you know? And then, you know, the women would have been like, oh, Loki, Loki, you know, all the female fans, all the, you know, like, little Comic-Con girls or whatever. And then in 3, he's back, and then you get the big, like, cheer, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I feel like they had to reveal Loki at the end of this movie because it's like, oh, there's more coming, you know what I mean?
Well, the Guardians of the Galaxy sort of tie-in there was just really awkward. It was one of the more awkward of their, like, post-credit things that they've done.
I think it's the worst one, quite honestly. And it wasn't directed by the director who directed the movie either.
That was James Gunn.
Oh, did James Gunn actually direct that sequence?
Yeah.
I thought maybe they had gotten, like, second unit or something.
No, I understand that it was very rushed and that, you know, they just sort of had to get it in. They wanted to get a Guardians of the Galaxy tie-in, and so, you know, like, they really sort of rushed it because, I mean, first of all, the thing looked really weird. It looked like old Doctor Who. Yeah, it's like a television science fiction. I think that the coloring was sort of funny, and, like, you know, they're walking around with, you know, in that sort of like a Doctor Who stage kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, with like rubbery, especially since, like, how great the rest of the movie looked with all of the attention to detail, and then suddenly you're in sort of like a generic sci-fi set, and then it's like, boom, here's some people from Asgard, and
yeah.
Were they on a mission from Odin? I don't know, because here they are just dropping off something that we haven't really been told about, you know. But it was was the only part of the movie that really, and it's technically not part of the movie. It's an ad for the next movie, but it just didn't. I didn't like that bit at all.
I hated it. I mean, that's the one thing. Exactly. I feel like if you're going to do that, if you're going to do the buttons at the end of the movie, make them high production value. You know what I mean? I felt like that. I mean, okay, like, I was really excited for Guardians of the Galaxy until I saw that. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, I don't know about this. You know what I'm saying? And to me, like, the casting of Benicio del Toro in certain things is, like, he's such a wild card, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That he can either come across, like, really skillful in his acting, or he can come across as a slight buffoon. And he came across like a little bit of a buffoon to me in this, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I understand Guardians of the Galaxy is going to have, like, a little bit of a, you know, comedic edge to it. But, it just was... Yeah, it didn't fit in with the movie that I'd just seen. And so I think I agree with Ian, it was just jarring.
Yeah.
And they managed to make, you know, they managed to fit in all sorts of other humorous things. I mean, the Captain America, little bit right there with Loki, I mean, that fit in just fine, you know?
Yeah.
But this didn't. It seemed really awkward. It seemed sort of shoehorned. And I hope that in the future when they're doing these things that they sort of take a little more care.
Yeah. I remember when we saw it, my wife was like, what was that? Like, you know, it was just kind of like, what? Like, where did that come from? And she was the one who said, that looks like an old Doctor Who set, you know? I don't know. What are your guys' assumptions that thing is in the box? Because I'm assuming that it was the jewel or the little round thing that they stuck into Curse to make him curse. Am I wrong in that?
Yeah, I thought that that the rocks to make the cursed were just temporary devices that once they were used they became the cursed or the accursed. I thought it was just one of the infinity gems, and of course Volstagg probably always has an infinity gem or two in his pocket when he's flying around in space to stop by collector's house. So yeah, that was definitely a bizarre scene in there. What are the Asgardians doing with an infinity gem? But that's kind of what I'm thinking is we got to put together the gems for the gauntlet, and so we get the next one in maybe in Captain America, then we get the next one in the next Avengers movie, and then building obviously to Avengers 3, where we'll most likely see an homage of some type to the Infinity Gauntlet or the Infinity series.
Well, that's the thing. Is it an Infinity gem? Because the whole reason I thought it was a curse thing, and when I go see it again, because I do want to see it again, I did like it that much that I want to sit and be able to. Plus, I was really tired when I saw it. Unlike a lot of people, once you gotta go with the sitter's schedule, and then I got off of work and we sat down for dinner, and then once you get to the theater, I sat down and I was like, wow, I'm tired right now. But the thing that they said, didn't they mention the Tesseract in that thing? Like he specifically say like that the Tesseract was one of the gems?
Yeah.
So, that's their reference name for the cube?
Yeah.
Right. So they were saying that this shouldn't be with the cube. So I'm guessing that's why I was leaning towards it being one of the infinity gems. And the collector being, that was one of his big deals, and he was one of the stops along the way for Thanos in the comics, to stop by and get the gem that the collector was holding on to, if they're being inspired by the original pieces of the story.
So did they destroy the ether, or were they able to capture it? That's kind of, I was unclear on that too.
Well, the ether in the film was the substitute for the cask of Ancient Winters, which they actually used in the first Thor movie. Uh-huh. And so that's why they said, well, we can't necessarily go back to it, but that's what Malekith was originally after, to freeze the Nine Realms and get it under the control of the Dark Elves. But so they substituted this ether thing, and whether they actually captured it for the movie, it was kind of ambiguous, I thought, as whether it was destroyed or temporarily, unavailable again, or, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to pay more attention on the second viewing, because I get the feel like what I went with was it was either the cursed gem or it was some of the ether that they had captured, but I don't know. I guess that's another thing that kind of like is like left up in the air with that little button at the end, where it's so just what's that, Ian?
My question was this, and I might have missed it in all these Marvel movies, but wasn't the gauntlet in the first Thor movie?
I don't remember.
I think in that hall of items and
that's
artifacts.
That's right.
Yeah, they did flash to it and stuff. So, and what was glowing in the box was, I thought it was a different color red than what they were using in the for the cursed stones. And I don't know. It's going to be kind of fun to find out, huh?
I guess so.
It looked like a miniature version of when the... That the thing that looked like 2001.
Yeah, exactly.
Underneath it did have that red glow at one point.
Yes, that's why I was thinking it was the ether too, because
right,
it looked like
it's a
little
mini. It's a mini version of that, and
stone.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. So it's that. Maybe it's that power they gave to the collector. But in the Infinity Gauntlet, and I actually read this not too long ago. The gauntlet's got to go from Thor. It's got to go from Asgard to Thanos somehow, right?
I guess at some point they're going to have to figure out how to get it to him. Because they haven't really introduced Thanos. Like, I'm assuming that's what Guardians of the Galaxy is going to do, right?
Well, yeah. Avengers. Who was at the end of Avengers? Wasn't that Thanos?
Yeah, yeah, but you haven't really been introduced to him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because at the end of Avengers, everyone was like, who's that guy? And then like everyone turns, because I went to a work screening, and everyone turns to me is like, who's that guy? And I was like, that's Thanos. And they're like, who's that guy? You know what I mean? Nobody has any idea who he is. So,
excuse me.
You know, I just think that at some point, and hopefully it's in Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, at some point they're going to have to whip Thanos out. And I don't know that they can wait up until the third Avengers movie. Do you guys?
I have no idea what they're going to do here.
Here we go.
Yeah, you have to be careful how you whip your Thanos out.
Yeah. Yo, you got to be real careful. And it, you know what's interesting, guys? I did look up Collector here, and in the very last paragraph, and you guys might have read this, the very last paragraph of the Marvel.com wiki, it says, once the Collector was resurrected, the Collector resumed his ancient task, and in his most recent known vision, he foresaw the attempt of Surtur to destroy Asgard. And then the Collector also saw fit to foil the juvenile plans of Enmity by using the female members of the Guardians of the Galaxy along with the Lady Liberators to I guess do whatever he was doing here. But I guess his newest version is tied into Asgard and the Guardians.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really cool that Marvel's been, what Marvel's been doing is that they've been pulling from a lot of the comic book stuff and not mimicking it so much. You know what I'm saying? But there's definitely a faithfulness to everything. Because I remember when I saw, I hadn't thought about that character curse since the 80s. You know what I mean? Since I read those original issues of Thor, you know, those Walt Simonson issues of Thor. And as soon as that armor happened, or he put the armor on, or it grew on him, or whatever, like, I was like, is that cursed? Like, it just, like, went right back into my memory, and I was like, that's so cool that they're using that guy who was, like, you know, I don't know if has he been, like, a mainstay of Thor, Don, or was he only during that Simonson run?
Malekith and Cursed have only been used a couple of times, which is, I guess, another great chance to mention the current run in comics, the Thor God of Thunder being written by Jason Aaron. Mentioned before that Malekith is being utilized. And I guess today, Jason Aaron in an interview was talking about Malekith being a mainstay in the Thor comics, that he should be a main villain, that he's actually of quality enough, a high enough, you know, of a threat to be around more often. So, but yeah, Curse has only been used a couple of times. He was Simonson, obviously. He originally appeared to fight Thor as Algrim, and they used his name in the movie too. So that those neat little nuggets, you know, tips of the cap for us longtime readers and stuff. I thought it was really cool. And the Simonson look to the curse armor is a little bit, you know, exaggerated. So I think maybe they were trying to go for that and for the movie look, whether you know, they completely pulled it off or not. But only maybe like three times since Simonson have we seen curse, a couple of, you know, so a couple of cameos here and there. So it was a fantastic choice to use him in the film. Yeah.
Hey guys, what I'm reading here on Yahoo, you know, for whatever that's worth, is that they're saying that the box that they're carrying is the ether. Because it cannot be destroyed, it can only be hidden, so they're carrying it to give to the Collector to hide it up.
That's what I think. I think in the movies you've got the Tesseract and now you've got the ether. I think the Infinity Gems are not necessarily gems to start out with, but maybe they'll become that later on down the line, you know?
Yeah.
Or so they'll be channeled, their power will be channeled into the gauntlet somehow, or something like that. But Don, when you're watching this movie, are you like me, like when I watch, like, say, something from, like, anything comic related with my wife, and I'm like, oh, ooh, like, I recognize something, and my wife's like, what? Like, what is, like, are you geeking out, like, during the Thor stuff? Like, do you get, like, extremely excited, or are you more calm than I am?
I can feign the calmness, because if I get too crazy in the theater, you know, then she gets too distracted. But I will, you know, make little notes, because she will look at me a couple times, you know, and like the scene with the Collector in the middle of the credits, like, who was that? What was, you know, what was going on there? You know, to help alleviate some of the confusion. But yeah, absolutely, I'll go, you know, I'll make some, you know, point at the screen and go, oh, that's really cool, or that's bad. Like I said, that scene to begin with, where he had jumped off the balcony and Mjolnir caught up with him, that was a major Thor geek moment. So yeah, I probably bothered her a little bit during that.
Yeah. I know sometimes my wife is like, "What? What is that? What are you getting so excited about?" And I'm like, "Oh, that's so cool." Yeah. So I'm assuming like we pretty much all liked it. I mean, Ian, you were kind of a little disappointed, but
I think it's because Benicio del Toro ruined it for me.
Well, then next time go see it again and walk out before he shows up.
Yeah, good idea.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean that little button was very weird, especially with the purple sort of Star Trek looking girl showing up. And being like, really, I was like, "What? What is this?" Like, yeah, I thought that was a little bit damaging to the end of the movie. But I have to say, I really liked it. The more I think about it, the more it grows on me even more, and the more I'm willing to sort of like forget the little things that kind of bugged me. You know, mostly being the pacing in the beginning of the film. You know, the pacing. I feel like there was some editing that was rearranged in there somehow. That might have messed up the flow of the opening of the movie, but like as it went on, I thought it was fantastic. Before we go, what do you guys think about this Netflix news?
It's the best. about the new basically, you know, not television series, but like essentially limited. Sort of the video equivalent of the limited issue series, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
So there's four of them. Is that right?
Yeah, it's going to be Daredevil, Jessica Jones, otherwise known as Alias, but they can't call it Alias, right. Power Man, Iron Fist, and they're each going to have their own series on Netflix, and then those are all going to combine into the Defenders.
Okay.
Great.
I mean, that's badass.
It's a good... I think it's a good set of characters for them to do that with.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, they're not really. I mean, they're not the comic book Defenders, because otherwise it would be like Ghost Rider and Hercules and Valkyrie, which would be a really weird mix-up. But I mean, I have to say, like a Daredevil TV show, a 13-hour movie or 10-hour movie or whatever on Daredevil, I am excited.
As long as they bring back Ben Affleck to play Daredevil.
No, definitely not. Please help us all.
He's busy. He's already very busy right now.
Yeah, he's already ruining Batman as we know it.
He's trying to incorporate as much drinking as he can into the role of
oh,
Batman.
Oh, God. No, no, no. Oh, God, no. Did you... So yeah, I mean, I've got my Netflix subscription. I'm going to keep it.
Because
I'm
should.
Super excited about
it. I think
this.
It's going to be great because the only thing I've heard that Netflix did not do right was Hemlock Grove.
I did not like Hemlock Grove, yeah.
And everything else they've put out is great, and there seems to be a very short distance of useless people between the creators of the series and the end product. Like it,
yeah.
And I've heard a lot of talks with the Netflix, the creative director guy. He does a lot of those tech talks. And he says his thing is not really to get involved creatively. And that's a great, great thing. Because, again, I think this we're going to get the Daredevil we wanted. Iron Fist, and Power Man. I mean, I hope they incorporate some of the new Iron Fist stories that I think Asia and Brubaker worked on.
Yeah.
You know, it's great. It's great news, you know.
Yeah, I honestly, this announcement has got me really excited, mostly because, you know, it is Netflix and it's sort of on par with making a deal with like HBO or Showtime or something. I mean, they're not going to go R, but maybe they could go PG-13 with.
Oh, sure, but and they're all going to come out at once. I mean,
are they all going to come out at once, or you think it's going to be?
Don't they do that? They release like. The whole
But I'm just saying, do you think like the first series of Daredevil
out? I think they'll do like they'll pick one. I think they'll go strong, and who knows, I would think they would want to do Daredevil first and set the pace.
But
they're gonna release, that's how they do it, right? They release all the episodes
at once.
I mean, that's if there was ever gonna be a part-time fanboy sleepover weekend.
I think that would be it. 13 hours of Daredevil.
We just get holed up in some like bunker somewhere with like just snacks.
Let's do it.
You have to change the name, though. You have to change the name from part-time fanboy to full-time fanboy with that kind of stuff.
With that kind of commitment.
Weekend warrior fanboy.
Weekend warrior fanboy.
That certainly would be something. It's super good news, and I hope that it's successful. Hemlock Grove, basically after watching the pilot on that, I realized, I'm not their target audience for this.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't necessarily think it was like bad or anything. I just realized like, well, yeah, this isn't for me.
I thought it was bad.
but in the, I am the target audience for Marvel TV shows. So
God, please don't mess it up. Please, please just make it good. Make them be good. I mean, oh, it's Daredevil. Don't mess up Daredevil again.
Yeah, but this is the best way it can be done. This is Marvel Studios going to Netflix. This is not Fox doing their version of X-Men. It's not Sony doing their version of Spider-Man. This is the same studio that's got a good handle on it. Even up until what I saw today, they've got a great handle on what the fans want. And I know they want to get back at who did that Daredevil? Fox?
Yeah, it was Fox.
I know they want to set Daredevil. You got to set Daredevil, right? So all the cards are lined up,
Well, did you see that blurb in some of the press releases where they were fighting crime in Hell's Kitchen? Paul, do you think that means it's going to be a period piece? 70s? Dude,
that would be too good to be true. That honestly would be too good to be true. If they did like a whole like sort of Defenders set in the 70s kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I think I would lose my mind if that were to happen.
I would definitely lose my mind because that would just be too good for this planet.
The first part-time fanboy weekend getaway.
What
just
plugged
into
Netflix. What would you guys think of, like, as far as the Kingpin? Like, hopefully we'll get to see a new Kingpin. I would really hope to see that. And then I know for Power Man, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson was heavily promoting himself on Twitter and social networks to get in a movie of that. And now I'm thinking, would Rock be the one they cast for this? 'Cause I'm not really into him doing that. I mean, I could understand why they would cast him, but I'm hoping it's someone else for Power Man.
No, you have to cast. I mean, is The Rock African American?
I think he's
More like Hawaiian.
He's Samoan. I think he's Samoan American.
Yeah, no, I think you've got to get like a serious African American, like.
Wait, actor. What is a serious African American?
Well,
mean?
No, I mean just a guy who looks African, who is an African American,
who has no sense of humor.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean I think you have to in that role. It's just one of the few like prominent African American like comic book characters that has any recognition. You can't mess with the ethnicity of it. You know what I'm saying? Sure. Or the race or whatever you want to call it.
Chinese, you can't see like a Chinese Power Man?
No, no Chinese Power Man. Maybe, I don't know, no Chinese Power Man. Save that for Iron Fist, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Shang Chai, Master.
Oh, Master of Kung Fu. Yeah. Oh, but see, and then if with Netflix, you could probably have like guest appearances, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So you could have like Shang-Chi.
I think, now, the more we talk about it, Marvel's going to use these four. I mean, this is four different shows. They're going to put I think they're going to put a ton of guest stars in here and build that kind of stuff that we just haven't had time for,
Just thinking about it is making me so happy. I have to say that, like, if, it's funny because it wouldn't even really set it apart from the Marvel movie universe if you were to set it in the 70s. Because if these were just dudes fighting crime in New York, like in the set, and you could tie in like Power Man, like maybe the experiment that gives him his powers is another like super soldier, experiment gone wrong or something. Like, I mean, it's just, there's so many possibilities because they could just be urban myths. They don't have to be like these huge, it could be like a story in the news that kind of just like disappeared. You know what I'm saying?
And more importantly, it's going to give children the opportunity to dress up
as these characters for Halloween. And I would love to see kids dressing as Iron Fist for Halloween.
That would be awesome. Be
awesome. Yes, very awesome.
Awesome. All right, so Marvel's on a roll still, except for maybe the little button at the end of Thor, the Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm pretty much satisfied with everything right now, so I don't know about you guys. Hopefully so. But I definitely dug Thor: The Dark World, and I think for the most part we can say that everyone else did too right now. I mean,
I mean, the next movie coming up is Captain America, right?
Yeah.
It looks good, too.
Oh, dude, that the trailer on the big screen.
Looks badass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did see the trailer with Thor.
We saw the 10-minute trailer.
In 3D?
Yes.
Like 5 minutes? How did it look?
It was pretty crazy. I mean, I didn't expect to see it, and I think I had seen some of that elevator thing, but this trailer just kept going, and I'm like, man, they're really pouring it on here. So we got the big fight in the elevator, and then some nice, sit down with Robert Redford, which is always good.
I'm calling Redford as the Red Skull. I'm still calling him as the Red Skull. I think he's the Red Skull.
Are you?
Okay, and then
what?
I love Bucky picking up the shield at the end too.
Yeah, yeah.
God, how cool was that? Wait, because there's a Red Skull too, correct?
Like you mean a second Red Skull?
I thought in the comics there was two. Is that true?
I don't know about now, but
okay.
The way that, and I think I talked about this on another podcast, is that at one point the Red Skull cloned Captain America's body and had his memories transplanted into it. And I'm calling that Redford is the Red Skull having cloned Captain America. And now he's older. But he's been alive this whole time manipulating events. And now that Captain America's back, he's going to F him up.
And now, do you foresee them doing the rip the skin off the face reveal for
no.
that?
No, because when the Red Skull... when the Red Skull did it in the comics, he just basically had Captain America's kind of face and body.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And then something happened where he got exposed to the red dust again, and his face got, like, shriveled or something.
He can't live that one down.
He has to be exposed. I'm calling it. I'm fucking calling it. I'm calling it.
I can get behind that.
Cool, guys.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Thank you for joining us, Don Lund. It's great having you on.
Thank you very much.
Cool. And so that's Ian Scheller and Paul Edwards, and I'm Christian Horn. And thanks for listening to Part-Time Fanboy. Hopefully we'll be back next week with another episode. Yeah.
Awesome.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
Oh yeah, doing part-time. Part-time fanboy.